Hey, sex fans, welcome back. Today is Monday, December 9th, 2013, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge with your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. That's me.
I can't believe I let you talk me into this.
Just give it a try. I know you're going to love it. So, alrighty then, I have some swell Q&A. In store for you today. I have a whole bunch of very interesting correspondents vying for their moment in the sun, so to speak, and each one is ready to share his or her sexual and relationship concerns with us, and I will do my level best to make my responses informative, enriching, and maybe even a little entertaining. But before we begin, a word from our sponsor.
I don't think so.
Yes, there is. This week's podcast is brought to you by DrDickSexAdvice.com and DrDickSexToyReviews.com. That's right, sex fans. Our sponsor today is me. Think of this as our very own winter pledge drive. You see, I want to call your attention to a standing invitation for everyone in my audience to support and underwrite these marvelous shows. I'm exceptionally proud of the quality programming I've been bringing you, my international audience. And over the last 5 years, I've presented a variety of extraordinarily informative, enriching, and entertaining shows, interesting interviews, enlightening Q&A, like today's show, and even some fun product reviews. I mean, where else can you find this sort of diverse, sex-positive programming? And all of this always comes to you absolutely free.
I don't understand.
Well, you need to pull your head out of your ass then. Okay, so right about now, you're probably asking yourself, hey, Dr. Dick, how can I help support and underwrite this effort? Well, I'll tell you. You just mosey on over to either one of my sites, DrDickSexAdvice.com or DrDickSexToyReviews.com, and look for the donate button. It's a blue, heart-shaped icon. Click on it and make your contribution. Any amount will do. But those folks donating $50 or more will receive a swell thank you gift. Excellent personal lube, smutty porn DVDs, wonderful sex toys, or some delicious erotica. Be the first one on your block to join me in bringing the world this fun, informative, and enlightening programming. Okay, on with the show. Let's start with some email, shall we? Alrighty then, let's see who's up first.
Oh, help me, help me, help me, somebody help me, help me, help me, help me.
No, really, let's hear from somebody real. Today's first correspondent is Karen. She's 31 and she writes from Kansas. My husband and I really love one another, but we almost never talk to one another anymore. We have three great kids, and we both are very devoted and attentive to them. We often go so far as to talk to one another through our kids. Go ask your dad, or go tell your mom. My husband and I are sometimes openly affectionate with one another, but we don't really have sex anymore. I don't know how he feels about that. Heck, I don't even know how I feel about it. What do you think I should do? Here's the thing. Anytime someone starts his or her message with, "My wife, husband, or partner and I are really in love," I know that the next word is going to be, "But." And sure enough, Karen from Kansas, you do not disappoint. Sounds to me like you and your husband are better at being parents than you are at being lovers. That's not a particularly unusual thing, mind you. And since you don't tell me what kind of sex life you used to have before it ceased to exist, I'd have to ask you a bunch of questions before I hazard a guess about what may be going on. I mean, did you guys have sex just to make babies? Like I said, that's not all that uncommon. Was there ever more to your lovemaking other than just procreation? Sometimes folks are just not all that interested in sex, and if you and your husband are two such people, And that's perfectly okay. There's nothing carved in stone about how married people should live out their intimate lives together. The thing that concerns me is that you and your husband appear to be little more than intimate strangers to one another. It's very telling that you comment that the two of you often talk to each other through your kids. That's an unfortunate pattern that will not serve you well in the years to come. When your children are old enough to have independent lives of their own, you and your husband won't know how to talk to one another at all, and I think that would be a calamity. How important is sex to either you or your husband? Damned if I know. The fact is that you found me here, on this very sex-positive site, so you, at least, must have some interest in sex. Am I wrong? But your interest in sex, or that of your husband, is that enough to punch through the lethargy you let overtake you? Well, that remains to be seen. If you guys don't want to wake up one day to an empty nest and some strange person staring at you across the kitchen table, then you'd better begin to invest a little time and energy into reacquainting yourselves with one another. If this leads to a reawakening of your sex life, that will be nice. But that shouldn't be why you ought to invest in this whole communication skill set thing, is it? But finding out who you are and who you're living with and letting him know is indeed essential. Here's the thing. Communication with your partner is the key to enjoying a life together, as well as better sex. This shouldn't be surprising, yet it is probably the most difficult part about being intimate with a partner. And I'm not just talking about sexual intimacy. You guys may be quietly dissatisfied with your life in general and or your sex life in particular, but you'll never know that without talking about it. You can't expect your hubby to read your mind, and he can't expect you to be a mind reader either. And your kids shouldn't be your intermediaries, so stop doing that. I can assure you that the avoidance status quo is doing more harm than good. The reluctance to communicate comes from our fears of rejection, being misunderstood, or hurting another's feelings. But what kind of relationship do you and your husband really have if there isn't a bond of trust that will help allay these kinds of fears? If you say that you and your husband love each other, doesn't that indicate a bank of goodwill and trust? So maybe all that's missing is taking the risk of opening a conversation that might actually surprise you with riches. Here are a few suggestions that you might want to employ that will help you break the ice and move off center. Remember, you are investing in your intimate life, and there is so much more to an intimate life than just bumping parts. Since you're not sure what it is that you want or need, start off by making a list of things you feel are missing. You don't have to show your list to your hubby if you don't want to, but making that list first will help you gather your thoughts, and that's an important first step. Once you've made a list, ask yourself how best you could broach these topics with your husband in a sensitive manner. You don't want to just submit a list of complaints. And as much as possible, try to come up with at least one suggestion as how you guys could work around the impasse you see between you. Once it's time to share what you've come up with, tell your husband that you'd like to spend a little time alone with him. Farm out the kids to a sitter or grandma, because you don't want them distracting you from this important work that you have ahead of you. Make sure that you guys have enough time to talk. Set aside an afternoon, for example. You might even consider having this conversation in a neutral place, somewhere other than your home. I always suggest to my clients that they have this kind of chat while out on a walk in nature. A park will do. First of all, you will be walking side by side, not facing each other. Your voices won't reverberate outdoors as they do indoors, and it's miraculous how our troubles and concerns seem to take on a new perspective as we move through the natural world. After all, we are such insignificant creatures, considering the vastness of nature, and so are our concerns and worries. Just know that this first conversation is the first of many. I suggest that you invite your husband to make a list of his own. You could talk about his concerns next time you guys have a chance to chat. You absolutely must build in some husband and wife time at least once a week from now on. Surely your role as parents will not suffer by this commitment. I have a lot of other suggestions about building up your communication skills. I invite you to check out the category drop-down menu in the sidebar of my site, drdicksexadvice.com. Scroll down until you find the main category, Sex Therapy, and under that you will find a subcategory titled Effective Communication. There you will find written and podcast form information that you will find really interesting. I encourage you to give this process some time to work. Communication is a process, but once it's begun, you may find that you look forward to meeting your husband on an adult footing. And who knows what wonderful things could come of that. Good luck.
I love you.
That's good to know. So next up is a guy named Darren. We have no idea what his age is or where he writes from. This is what he says. I've been shooting meth into my dick for a few years now, and I'm worried that I'm doing harm to my dick. Am I doing harm or not? Oh, yikes! Yes, you absolutely are, but I think you already know that, right? I mean, can anyone actually say they are addicted to anything without also acknowledging that they are out of control with whatever it is that they are addicted to? Add to that the poison that is meth, and add to that the fact that you are injecting it, and add to that the fact that you're shooting this shit into your poor defenseless dick. Why are you punishing your poor fucking cock like that? Listen, I'm no Puritan when it comes to drugs, my friend, but even you have to admit that what you're doing is extreme. And the consequences will be dire. I promise you that. I had a friend in San Francisco who used to shoot crystal into his cock. Now he's crippled with Peyronie's disease. And if you don't know what that is, look it up on the internets. And even if that doesn't happen to you, you are destroying your sexual response cycle, which may never return to normal. But like I said, I think you must know all of these things already. Am I right or am I right? Listen, won't you please get help and stop this self-destruction? Good luck.
I don't think so.
Okay, have it your way. Listen, speaking of cocks, I have a fascinating list of 10 facts you may not know about penises. Let's face it, penises are cool, especially for those of us who have one. They provide pleasure while helping perpetuate our species. Okay, number 10. Do you know the etymology for the word penis? The word penis comes from the Latin word for tail, if you can stand it. And penis wasn't adopted into the English language until the 17th century. Prior to that, a penis was referred to as a yard. And I'm thinking that that has something to do with naval and shipping and things like that, like a yardarm. But I have to check that myself. Number 9. The largest erect penis ever to be medically verified measured 13.5 inches long and 6.25 inches in circumference. And this happy thing, it belongs to an American bisexual man named Jonah Cardali Falcon. His penis is 9.5 inches when flaccid. But having the world's largest penis isn't all it's cracked up to be. John says that when he meets people, they find it hard to look him in the eye. They just see what's in his trousers. and it's become a real problem for him. There are all kinds of other problems associated with an enormous endowment like John's, but I'll have to save that for another time. Number 8. Speaking of penis size, did you know that the average penis size for American men is 5.6 inches long when erect? That means there are a whole lot of liars out there, don't you think? Number 7. Did you know that 1 in 400 men is flexible enough to perform oral sex on himself? It's true. Look it up. Number 6. Some babies are born with two penises. Diphyllia, also known as penile duplication, is when a child is born with two penises. It is a rare condition that affects maybe 1 in every 5 or 6 million males. The most famous man with this condition was Juan Bautista dos Santos. By the way, he also had a third leg. Juan was born in Portugal in 1863, and both of his members were said to be fully functional, meaning he could urinate and ejaculate from each. Juan is said to have been a man of exceptional animal passion. What a nice way of putting it. He was able to have sex with both of his penises, finishing off with one and then continuing with the other. Number 5. Yes, it is possible to break your penis, or at least fracture it at any rate. Penile fractures affect around 200 Americans every year. This usually happens to guys who are aggressively masturbating or fucking or trying ill-advised sexual acrobatics. You see, during an erection, your cock becomes engorged with blood. If your Johnson is suddenly bent in a forceful manner while you are hard, the trauma can rupture the lining of one of the two cylinders inside the penis known as the corpus cavernosum. This is usually accompanied by a cracking sound, ouch, followed by severe bruising and swelling. So why not take care of your penis? Number 4. Did you know that the order to ejaculate comes from your spinal cord and not your brain? No wonder some of us guys have timing that is way off. Number 3. The average man shoots between 1 and 2 teaspoons of cum per orgasm. Each wad contains approximately 7 calories, and each spurt propels through the air about 28 miles per hour. It is believed that the average man will ejaculate about 7,000 times in his lifetime. Yay! Number 2. Did you know that the average male has 11 erections during the day, and anywhere between 3 and 9 during the night? Nighttime erections are called nocturnal penile tumescence, don't you know? And each erection generally lasts 25 to 35 minutes apiece. And this is a real good thing, don't you know? Because erections keep your penis healthy. Your cock needs to be exercised, in other words. Oxygen-rich blood flowing into the soft tissues of your dick, which makes an erection, keeps it in tip-top shape, so to speak. Without regular erections, penile tissue can lose its elasticity and actually shrink, making your penis as much as 1 to 2 centimeters shorter and diminishing its girth as well. Number 1. Contrary to popular belief, you cannot gauge the size of a man's penis by the size of his feet. A study from the University College Hospitals in London measured the penises and feet of 104 men and found absolutely no correlation whatsoever. You can also not tell the size of a man's willy by the size of his fingers, or his nose, or what kind of vehicle he drives. Although those really big Humvees, you gotta wonder. There is no scientific data that supports any of these hypotheses. Now, how fun was that?
Let me out of here!
Oh, just simmer down and enjoy it. You know that was fun. Okay, next we hear from Tricia, who's 38. Again, we don't know where she writes from. This is what she says. I have a question I'm too embarrassed to ask my doctor. First, a little about me. I really like anal sex. I like it even more than vaginal sex. I often come and squirt through anal sex, but never through vaginal sex. Every one of my dyke friends thinks I'm a man trapped in the body of a woman. I guess my G-spot is just in a different place than theirs. Anyhow, here's the problem. I recently developed hemorrhoids. Do you think my anal pleasuring caused this condition? If not, do you think it's okay for me to continue my assault? Assault, I love it. You go, Trish. First off, you are not the first woman to tell me about G-spot pleasuring through butt-fucking. And, if you think about it, it makes perfectly good sense. The homologous tissue to the male prostate, or P-spot, is the female's G-spot. And hemorrhoids, as you probably already know, are swollen and inflamed blood vessels found at the end of the rectal canal. They are very common. Almost half of all adults will experience hemorrhoids by age 50. Hemorrhoids can be found externally around the opening of your butthole and or internally inside your rectum. And they can cause itching, bleeding, discomfort, and even pain. Anal sex does not cause hemorrhoids. That's a myth. More often than not, hemorrhoids are caused by increased pressure on the veins in the rectal area, such as bearing down for bowel movements, lifting something heavy, pregnancy, or even standing for long periods of time. But does that mean that people with hemorrhoids cannot have anal sex? No, not necessarily. If you are already in the care of a doctor for this condition, then I recommend you consult with that physician about the wisdom of resuming your ass play. It's so unfortunate that some of us are fearful of sharing this kind of information with our physicians. I know that they can sometimes be very judgmental, but it's also important that our healthcare providers know about our full range of our sexual activities in order to be able to provide us the service that is best for us. If your physician is judgmental or unwilling to discuss anal sex, it's probably time to look for a new provider. However, for most folks, hemorrhoids are a nuisance, but not so much so that a doctor has to be involved. If this is the case for you, then you will have to be the judge of when it is time for you to return to your anal pleasuring. Many hemorrhoidal sufferers claim that gentle anal stimulation with a small gauge vibrator actually helps relieve some of the discomfort as well as shrink the hemorrhoids themselves. I hasten to reiterate the gentle and small gauge parts of that sentence. I probably don't have to remind you of this, but I'm going to say it anyway. Be sure to use lots of lube. Go slowly and listen to your body. Stop any activity that causes pain, discomfort, or irritation. Using a position where you are lying on your stomach and have your butt slightly elevated may decrease swelling in the area during anal play. Lots of friction can be very irritating, so you might want to use a butt plug or other forms of solo play that don't involve a lot of in-and-out thrusting action from a partner. Go for smooth toys rather than ones that have ribs, bumps, or other kinds of textures. And try a lube that contains aloe vera or some other soothing ingredients. Good luck.
No, that's not going to do it.
Okay. So next we hear from Candace, who's 22, and she writes from Cleveland. She asks, is there such a thing as porn for women? Yeah, sure. You betcha. Listen, there's never going to be one simple answer to the question, what turns women on, any more than there's a simple answer to the question, what turns men on. Women are just as unpredictable about their eroticism as men. And what turns an individual woman on, most likely, will change over time. Let's face it, for some women, a man wielding a vacuum may be even more erotically charged than a dude wielding an erection. Now, nowadays, porn comes in all shapes and sizes, and it is designed to titillate a much broader swath of the population than ever before. Before I begin to address all the marvelous porn being produced by women for women, let me mention that loads and loads of women have loved gay porn for many, many years. And it stands to reason, right? After all, men are the erotic object for most of these women, and gay male porn offers some of the most stunning and tantalizing examples of male flesh around. And add to that that there are no women in these movies. There are no women to compare oneself to in gay porn. No women are ever degraded or exploited in gay porn. And lots of women love seeing men on the receiving end of penetrative sex. It's such a delicious and refreshing change of pace, don't you think? Okay, so let's take a look at porn produced for straight women. There used to be very little in this category, and nowadays, however, there has been an explosion of such productions, and there are a number of production houses cranking this stuff out. The main producers are Candida Royale and Femme Productions. The first person to create porn movies for straight women, Candida Royale, Femme series, has been selling like hotcakes since 1985. And she's still going strong. Candida legitimized the idea of women enjoying porn, and she has been inspiring a new wave of directors and producers that are following in her footsteps. Candida's movies have internal cum shots, no unseemly facials, romance, plots, and, of course, hardcore sex. Candida's pioneering work in the adult film industry has been based on insisting that female viewers of porn should have their own films. She is much revered in feminist porn circles for her work, and her films continue to be bestsellers. Next, there's Lust Films. Spanish feminist director Erica Lust has made waves with her own version of hot hardcore women porn. Her collection of short films, Five Hot Stories for Her, won Film of the Year at the 2008 Feminist Porn Awards, and Life, Love, Lust won that same award in 2011. Erica has a degree in political science, specializing in feminism. And in 2004, she made an erotic short called The Good Girl, which received much critical acclaim. She went on to found Lust Films, a media company, which aims to create feminist, female-friendly adult films. She's also an author of note, and she's become one of the better-known female directors of porn for women. Next, Her Porn. UK independent filmmaker Petra Joy has created her own brand of adult film. Her motto is, "Feeling it, not faking it." And the focus is on sensuality without sacrificing the heat. Her films feature real-life couples acting out explicit sexual scenarios and are based on her own fantasies as well as those of other women. Her aesthetic is more sensual. She is interested in suggestion rather than blatant gynecological close-ups. Petra originally worked at the German TV network, where she produced short erotic films for a series, Love and Sins. Her photography has won numerous awards, including a nomination at the British Erotic Awards in 2003. Petra says, "I want porn that stimulates the mind and feeds the soul. That is educational and inspirational, creative and kinky, and because I can't find it anywhere else, I make my own." And finally, there's Sweet Sinner, and Hard Candy films. After a career performing in and making girl-on-girl films via her sweetheart video line, Nicole decided she wanted to create movies depicting heterosexual sex for women and couples. The big challenge was applying her ideals of intimacy and realism to boy-on-girl scenes. She wanted to make porn that was more emotional and personal, with a real emphasis on female pleasure and orgasms. The result was Sweet Sinner, a line of hardcore erotic films that women totally enjoy. Nika says there are no facial cum shots in these films, although there are some external spunk. She herself prefers the guys to come inside and to stay connected with their partners before, during, and after ejaculation. Her films always ensure that the woman have orgasms, even if it's after the guy. So, hooray for that. Nika also directed some of Sweet Cinema's films, which are features inspired by mainstream movies. Nika left Sweet Sinner and Mile High Media and started a new studio she calls Hard Candy Films. It's a company that makes couples-oriented porn, which is basically the same thing as women-oriented porn, if you ask me. Nika says that she likes to create more emotional, nuanced films with her new company and is embracing a greater creative freedom. Her films still offer non-formulaic sex and complicated relationships within the confines of a feature. She writes and directs all of her own films. So good for her. Okay, that's it for today. We're going to pick up this topic again next week for our final podcast of the year. Well, that's it for today, sex fans. Tune in next week at the same time for a special show celebrating a major milestone, my 400th podcast, and more sex advice with an edge, with your host, me, Dr. Dick.
You use your tongue prettier than a $20 whore.
That's high praise coming from you. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick's Sex Advice and Dr. Dick's Sex Toy Reviews. Simply put, I need your help to continue to provide shows like the one we just heard. But you may be asking yourself, hey, why should I make a donation? Well, I'll tell you. Infrastructure and administrative costs for a free site like this are astronomical. So if you like what you see and hear, if you enjoy all the wonderful features of DrDickSexAdvice.com and DrDickSexToyReviews.com, then I invite you to make a modest one-time donation online. We suggest a donation between $20 and $50, but any amount will be gladly accepted. This is a one-time donation. There are no automatic credit card renewals or processing fees, and you can be certain that every dime you donate will go to support this valuable sex-positive effort. Finally, your donation underscores your social conscience, your sponsorship helps disseminate badly needed sex education and sexual enrichment messages throughout the entire world. I thank you in advance for your generosity. Okay, until next time, remember, sex is good. And good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.